and Sweeney, that the president had clearly made that promise at the height of COVID-19 that his government was going to donate in part or the whole of their salary. Then he says that 1.78 million CD does not look big enough. And the minister has been responding that it appears all ministers who are MP did not contribute this way because their salaries are paid from Parliament, and Parliament may not have done this deduction. And so the 1.78 million CDs that were realized were the President, the Vice, and other ministers whose salaries are not directed through Parliament. And so that is the information she has been providing to the House in terms of how exactly that amount of money has gone in to help the country's fight against COVID-19.
1.78 million CDs. Thank you very much, Kwaku, from Parliament on what has been happening there today. There's a lot more on Newsnight. We start right now.
Good evening and welcome to Newsnight. In the next 60 minutes, teacher unions fight proposed free SHS bill. We'll get to hear from NAT and NAGRAT as they take on the education ministry, accusing it of playing politics with education.
We already have the law, but looking at what the graphic reportage, it's like a political talk that somebody's entertaining fear.
We'll get to hear from renowned educationist Professor Stephen Adair as he questions the need for a law to regulate the free SHS policy.
Now you say you have prepared a bill, a law to go to Parliament, and then you sneak out certain aspects of it. I think that it is a bad way of going about it.
Also tonight, Civil and Local Government Staff Association of Ghana, CLOGSAG, swerves meeting with NLC only to continue their strike unabated.
You see, they sent a letter to the commission 3 days ago, which was suggestive that they might not attend.
We'll get to hear from the NLC as it says their action is declared by the National Labour Commission as not well constituted. We'll get to hear from the Labour Commission on the stance they've taken on CLOGSAG.
Yes, we'll direct them to call off the strike because it's unfortunate.
Also tonight, Finance Ministry insists there's been value for money audit after telling the House 339 million CDs have so far been released for the National Cathedral project.
For money audit, I'm done on the project in 2021 by Casely Doyumu. Also, a statutory audit of the National Cathedral of Ghana accounts by Deloitte Ghana was started in July 2023 and is ongoing.
And still in Parliament, they have advised Trade and Industry Minister to withdraw controversial LI seeking to regulate cement prices barely 24 hours after it was laid.
I will advise, I'm not directed, I will advise that the sponsors of the instrument should take a second look at it and, if possible, withdraw and capture it in the appropriate language.
Meanwhile, divisions in the minority deepens as more members raise fresh concerns about the legality of the proposed legislative instrument.
Core mandate of the Standards Authority is in respect of quality of goods, not with respect to the pricing of those goods.
But I'm minded to test this matter in the Supreme Court.
In business, foreign direct investment for first quarter picks up strongly to hit $124 million.
And as well as we hear from Ghanaian swimmer Giselle Mensah following her qualification for the upcoming 2024 Olympic Games in Paris via the World Cup.
And later in an NSMQ update today, we'll get to introduce and welcome Presby SHS Bombata. They are the latest entrants into the National Science and Maths Quiz after beating Chinebwa Kudia SHS and Edujefi SHS. You want to stay for details of that and more here on Newsnight. Your thoughts, comments are welcome. It's via WhatsApp 055-111-1997. We're also live on X Spaces. You're on myjoyonline.com. Leave us a comment with the hashtag Newsnight. I am MFA Apau.
My name is Evans Mensah. And let's start tonight on that raging controversy now on that free SHS bill that we're hearing from pre-tertiary teacher unions across the country. And they are tonight uniting to fight the proposed bill being championed by the Education Ministry. The Minister, Dr. Yao Edichim, this week provided details about the bill, which is set to be laid before Cabinet for consideration. He told the Daily Graphic newspaper that the bill will scrap the basic education certificate examination as a prerequisite for progression and make secondary school 6 years while decoupling the junior secondary school from basic education.
We are now hearing from both the Ghana National Association of Teachers, NAT, and the National Association of Graduate Teachers, NAGRAT, where President of NAT, Reverend Isaac Owusu, questions the need for a free SHS law. He's been speaking on PM Express.
No, we already have the law. You see, currently, if you look at Act 1049, which is for Pre-Tertiary Education Act. If you look at Section 1, Section 2, and 3, the 3 is specific, which talks about free secondary education. Secondary education in its different forms, including technical and vocational education, shall be free and accessible to all eligible candidates. So we already have the law. At 1049. So that is why I'm saying that, to the best of my knowledge, for us, some of us are not privy to the content of the proposed bill that the minister is sending to parliament. Is it that you want to give extensive, comprehensive legislation on pre-secondary school, or you want to amend the entire pre-tertiary education system?
Is it your position then that we don't need another law as is being proposed by the minister?
We already have the existing law.
Okay.
So it's either you are bringing an ally to give more clarification on how we should implement the free secondary school. But you cannot say that you are bringing a proposed new bill. That's why I'm asking, is it going to replace the Act 1049? Or is it going to stand on its own? The Act 1049 talks about pre-tertiary education, which includes secondary education. So maybe until we see the content, then we will understand the minister. But looking at what the graphic reported, it's like a political talk that somebody's entertaining fear.
So we also learned that civil society groups in the education space are also mobilizing to send a petition on this particular matter. We heard from Kofi Asare, who is the head of the Africa Education Watch.
The structure of the pre-tertiary education system is already in law. It's in the pre-tertiary education law, which Nana Akufo-Addo, His Excellency, passed and signed on 29 December 2020. Act 1049 has the structure of the pre-tertiary education system, which includes basic and secondary education and TVET. So the structure is there.
But Kofi, if you read the graphic interview, the minister seemed to suggest that once this law is passed, you will cease to have the junior high school nomenclature, will cease. And then you will have only the secondary school.
Yeah, so you can choose to call the junior high school a junior secondary school. But we all know that when President Kufo was changing junior secondary school to junior high school, it didn't go through law. It wasn't a series of... You see, laws provide legal, institutional, and regulatory frameworks for the enforcement of rights. Policies provide the operational frameworks for the implementation of these rights as encapsulated in law. So the things we are discussing are not legal issues.
Well, today, the National Association of Graduate Teachers have also issued a strongly worded statement on the proposed bill following the minister's interview with us this week. Well, let's go through the statement.
This is signed by all executives of NAGRAT. It's a strongly worded one indeed. They talk about disgust, they talk about grave concern, but fundamentally, they are talking about lack of consultations. After the minister spoke to Graphic and put out some of the details there, they expressed their disappointment with the lack of any extensive stakeholder consultations on this particular bill, especially from the teacher unions. And now you've heard NAT already make the point there that the law already exists in some form. And that they NAGRAT, since the implementation of the free SHS program, they've been calling for a review to right the wrongs and affirm the good therein. And so if you are thinking about a law, then you should come to them before you even start talking about it. So that the first time you hear it, it will be something that all stakeholders have contributed to before it even goes to cabinet. But that's the position that they hold on this particular matter. And they're asking parliament, especially the Select Committee on Education, that they call it the so-called bill, is without education stakeholders' inputs, particularly the teacher unions, and therefore should respectfully be rejected. So we're asking for rejection from Parliament already on this particular matter. And I want to bring in Angel Kabonu, who is the president of the of NAGRAD, and joins us right now on the line. Mr. Kabonu, thanks for your time here on Newsnight. I mean, if you listen to the speaker, the minister, in the interview that he granted to the Daily Graphic, he says this bill is now on his way to cabinet. It's not even in cabinet yet. Do you still insist that you should be consulted even before cabinet considers it?
Come again.
I'm talking about the minister's position on this proposed bill. In that interview that he gave to the Graphic, he says cabinet is yet to consider it. I mean, you still insist that you should be consulted before cabinet even considers it?
Yes. In fact, we are amazed at the trajectory of discussion in the media, in Parliament, statement made by the president, and a statement being made by the minister on a non-existent bill. If you recall, a few days ago, the president announced that they were sending a bill to Parliament to make free speech legally binding. If there is no bill, what was the president talking about? So it started a shadow boxing where even the majority leader stated and was creating the impression that his opponent is opposing the bill. Now we are hearing that there's even no bill in the in cabinet, let alone parliament. Then the minister comes in and says the bill that he will be sending to cabinet includes reformation of the structures of education, that is, adding the junior high school to the senior high school to make senior high school a six-year program. And that BEC exam will no longer be there for the purpose of certification, but will be for the purpose of selection and all that. Then we became suspicious, because if the minister is talking like this, then there is a certain document he is referring to that is not known to any of us. And that what will be going to cabinet will not only be a document that will make free senior high school legally binding, but will be a document that will be far-reaching beyond the shores of free education, goes to the structure of education and all that. Then we ask, if there is anything like this, who and who sat down to formulate that? And who was consulted? We have been in this country for a while. I mean, and we've had different education reform documents, starting from the first regime. But the one of most recent recall is the Anamoa Committee established by the former President Kukuo. The Anamoa Committee was set up with a concept from government. Anamoa went through the length and breadth of this country, solicited information, discussion and ideas from local chiefs, from education workers, from parents, from religious bodies. Indeed, from all stakeholders in education, brought this into a document and presented that document to the government of the day. Cabinet then looked into those documents and issued a white paper on the document, which then became operational in this country. Have we done something like that to any concept of education since up to today?
But Kabonu, if Parliament, if Cabinet considers it and it goes to Parliament, you definitely get an opportunity to make inputs at that level. No, at least God, Parliament will invite memorandum there.
That will be a very late stage. It will be a very late stage in making inputs. Look, we have had a situation in this country when a controversial bill was passed a day before cabinet, parliament rules after general elections. We've had that situation in this country. We have to, and look, you see, people do not know the nuances that goes on when Senate committees are sitting on issues and government has a desire to pass that into law. We are talking about an education bill. We are talking about education reform, something that will affect the future generations and the future path of our country. Even we, those who are practitioners in education, cannot claim to own education or cannot claim monopoly over how education should be run. Education is for the people. You cannot, under any circumstances, come up with a major change and shift in how education is operated without wider consultation and the buy-in of the people. Well, other than that, when it comes, it will fail at implementation stage.
The minister has spoken. Then, the minister has spoken already. Will you reach out to him, your group?
Yeah, we are, by the statement we've issued, we are reaching out to whoever is concerned. By the discussion you and I are having, we are opening the frontiers of discussion and a call for the right thing to be done in the interest of education and teachers, students, parents, and all.
So for clarity, you want to make input before it goes to cabinet? So
for clarity, we even want to understand what's going on. What is going on? What do government want to reform? What aspect of education does government want to pass a law on? What are the ingredients in that document? Who formulated the document and what is the purpose of what has been formulated?
If you don't get that?
Oh, we'll keep mounting pressure.
Mr. Kamadu, thank you very much. That there is a president of the National Association of Graduate Teachers. And, you know, incidentally on PM Express Advice today, we also had Professor Sibin Adai, renowned educationist. Mm-hmm. And he also raised concerns about the approach adopted by the education ministry.
As someone who has been in the education field for a good part of my life, not all my life, and watching things for the past 75 years of my life, I find all these discussions a bit funny and unusual. And I don't know what the minister is aiming at to achieve in throwing this into the public domain. Because he only see, you may say that we want to look at the pre-SHS and see how we can improve it and then have forum. The experts come in, we discuss it. Now you say you have prepared a bill, a law to go to parliament, and then you sneak out certain aspects of it. I think that it is a bad way of going about it. Instead of concentrating on preparing their children for the BCE and WASI, when they have 2 weeks to go, you throw this into the air. This is not acceptable. In Kri, we say,
well, I want to hear from you on this matter. You've heard from the teacher unions, and MFR Powell, you're a parent yourself, and I'm pretty sure you have a position on the matter. Share your thoughts with us, 055-111-1997. Where do you stand on this debate as it relates to the free SHS bill? The teacher unions are opposed to where they are actually criticizing the approach. And what about the substance of what the minister had proposed? He wanted to couple junior high school from basic and add it to the senior high school. So you have 6 years of secondary school education. And then they also want to cancel the BECE so it doesn't become a prerequisite for entry into the senior high school. Share your thoughts with us here on Newsnight.
Honestly, it seems like there's a lot of confusion in the system, especially when we are introducing a new curriculum. We're rolling it out, and then now we're hearing about regulation amongst others. But really, let's take some of the comments that have come in. This one says, it seems MPP is confused about education system because our children don't have enough classrooms, desks, amongst others, that he says. That's message, I think, is from Promise, from Keta. We'll take some more of your messages. messages that you've sent in on this. And this one, Sena Hateka says, what Mr. Kabunu is saying is totally true. We have one from Nana Ikuya Mwabwating speaking about other issues that we'll get into. And this one also says, I'm finding it difficult to understand some members of the government. Okay, so we'll take some of your messages. We'll make time and take some of the messages that you've sent in via WhatsApp on 055-11-11-997. But you can continue the discussion wherever you are and send us messages with the hashtag Newsnight. Now let's go on some other stories, Evans, shall we? Because tonight, the third accused in the controversial ambulance trial is waging war on the military hierarchy as he instructs his lawyers to subpoena the military command contesting reasons they tabled for releasing him from service. Richard Jagba, who served as a lieutenant in Ghana Armed Forces, was released from service in 2007. In a confidential document cited by Joy News, the armed forces says Richard Jagba was a bad example by all standards, and his continued retention is likely to cause harm to the service. They add that Richard Jagba was incessantly indebted to various people and institutions, pointing to his long indebtedness to Recce Regiment PRI to the tune of $300, which he was unable to pay until the authority was forced to deduct the said amount from his salary. But Richard Jagba, who is contesting the narrative, says he's ready to take on the Ghana Armed Forces. He spoke on The Pulse.
Very strange, my brother, and that is why I'm contesting it, and that is why my lawyers are going to subpoena the military command
to come and explain this
to
letter.
To come and provide evidence to the consistent fraudulent conduct, the institutions that I owe, the people that I owe, the military trial proceedings that took place that conclusively found me guilty, for them to write such a thing about me. Mm-hmm. Without copying me, without confronting me, without giving me the natural justice for me to even defend myself.
All right.
The letter is from Army Headquarters.
Mm-hmm.
Military officers, they have their units. I was under Recce Regiment, and the Recce Regiment is under a Southern Command headed by a Brigadier General. So we respond directly to that Southern Command, then from there to the Army Headquarters. So if you are writing something like this, you should have been quoting references from which this complaint
was made
from. But you look at the letter, there are no references on that letter at all. So it meant that the Army Headquarters on its own, out of a vacuum, created this story of consistently fraudulent, owing people, institution, because they didn't reference anything. And when you look at the letter again, you see that they've underlined. It's underlining, which means that the chief of staff would have read that letter and taken note of those areas.
Mm-hmm.
If he does that, he will comment on it. He'll write a minute, he'll comment on it.
Mm-hmm.
But there's nothing like that. And then if the letter indeed went to the chief of staff office from the Army Headquarters, you would have seen receipt stamp or the chief of staff office receipt on it. So this letter that they are throwing around, claiming it to be my release letter, which is not true, it was a recommendation,
mm-hmm,
signed by a dead military officer.
But you accept the recommendation, but you are disputing the words they used to describe it.
Yes.
You're also saying that you are not privy to this letter.
Yes, as you can see, it is not my release letter as they are throwing it around. They are very ignorant and mischievous. That is one. Two, the content there, I'm not privy to them. I've not been confronted. I've not been charged on them.
You are also saying that at no point did the military recommend your release from the service.
No, I can't say they didn't recruit. I'm not privy to that.
Mm-hmm.
But this particular recommendation,
you are contesting it.
I'm contesting it. And the letter by Nitiul is even the worst of it all. He quoted unsatisfactory, which falls under item 2, clause C.
Perhaps referencing this letter signed by MGK Ahiaglu.
If he's referencing from this letter, then he has a problem. Because I don't see a Minister of Defense will be sending a letter to an attorney general to tell the attorney general this is the reason he was released.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I was released is premised on the official release letter.
Well, we also learned in this exclusive interview on The Pulse that Richard Jagba is a strong sympathizer of the NDC. In fact, he's worked for them as far as the election monitoring is concerned. He was alongside Rojo Metununu in the back room, in the strong room, as we used to call it then, in 2008 during that general elections.
Well, I'm a sympathizer of the NDC, and I've been an operative for the NDC For years.
So you're a member of the NDC?
I'm a member.
A card-bearing member?
Not a card-bearing member. As I told
you, in 2008, you played an active role in the affairs of the NDC.
Yes,
you were a member of the team that was in the EC strong room when the late Mills was bidding to become president.
Yes,
that should make you a very key member of the NDC.
Yes, I told you. Because of this case that I'm on the land, I operate behind. I'm a covert op. I will have people who are on air, a cabinet member. They do their political thing. I don't do politics. I'm an operative, I'm an intelligence guy. I operate behind the scene. That is my job. I don't like the limelight. But this case has now brought me out. So
you're a member of the NDC?
I'm a sympathizer.
That explains why you decided to give
I'm a sympathizer of the NDC. That's how I'll describe myself. And the strong room you are talking about, yes, indeed, yes. Bojo Metilninu and myself were represented at Atamels in the strong room in 2008.
Few months have been discharged from the Ghana military.
No, I was discharged in 2007.
2007.
Election was
in 2008.
2008 December. Mm-hmm. About 1.5 years. So that is completely different.
But 1.5 years to be trusted with the responsibility of managing the results of the presidential elections, that obviously means that your relationship with the NDC back then was so tight that they could trust you with that responsibility.
It's because NDC has its appendage from the PM. Mm-hmm. And my father was instrumental in PNDC. In fact, he was one of those who they went and released Rawlings from jail. And from there, he became the Armed Forces Committee Defense of Revolution.
Yeah,
they defended the AFC. They defended the revolution until that 92, we moved into democracy. And they continued until 2000. Mm. So he was an integral part of the survival of the revolution. You understand? Mm. And into NDC. So it's a family issue.
It runs through their blood.
It runs through their blood. So you cannot jettison Jakpa from NDC.
That's Richard Jakpa. He's the third accused person in the ongoing ambulance trial. Well, his cross-examination is over. Yeah, and he's been speaking to my colleague Elton Broby on the Pulse on the Joy News channel. That full interview is available on all our social media platforms, also on myjoyonline.com. You really want to catch that interview.
You do, and you're still live here on Newsnight. It's on Joy 99.7 FM. And Elton, just like 30 minutes ago from Parliament, that the Finance Ministry has been updating the House on the National Cathedral project. Guess how much the state has spent on this so far?
Tell me.
339 million cedis has so far been spent on the National Cathedral project. Listen to the Deputy Finance Minister who has been to the House today.
She's now the Minister of State.
Oh, Minister of State. Mm-hmm. That's true. You're right. And that Minister of State of the Finance Ministry, Abenose Asare, who was on the floor today on that matter.
For money audits done on the project in 2021 by Casely Doyumu Group. Also, a statutory audit of the National Cathedral of Ghana accounts by Deloitte Ghana was started in July 2023 and is ongoing. The auditors had concluded the audit of the 18-month account ended 31st December 2020. Meanwhile, preparations are in place for the auditors to complete the remaining accounts for the period ended 31st December 2021, 2022, and 2023. I remember that from the onset, the Ministry of Finance mentioned that our contribution to the National Cathedral will be the land and some seed money. And this was in the budget, previous year's budget. I can't state exactly which year, but clearly it was in the budget that we were going to give some seed fund and the land as our contribution to that. So, Mr. Speaker, that is what I can say to that. But clearly, we have records to show how much we have paid. And so it is not something that is not transparent enough. We all know how much we have paid.
And that is the Minister of State and the Finance Ministry, Bena Osayasari.
Let's bring in the North Tongue MP, Samuel Okudjetua Blakwa, for a quick reaction to this. You know he's been leading this particular project when it comes to the National Cathedral. We are grateful for your time here on Newsnight. So you sat through Parliament, you listened to the Minister of State and the Finance Ministry revealing that there's been a value for money audit that has been done. And so far, 339 million Ghana cedis has been released for the project. Your reaction?
The National Cathedral project continues to be a very hazy, sleazy, totally corrupt project, a project with massive diversions and lack of accountability in a very grave manner. When you follow proceedings today, you will observe that I asked the Honorable Minister of State at the Ministry of Finance that before they made those releases, did they check that there was a PPA approval, that this project had gone through the required procurement process? And she said that she has to go back to the ministry to find out and come back to the house. Can you believe that? When you have already released over 330 million Ghana cedis, at the time, $58.1 million, you are now going to check if there's PPA approval. Well, the news I have for the minister is that I did an RTI request on the 4th of July, 2022, 2 years ago, and the PPA responded that there has not been a procurement approval for the contractor Ribadi to move to site and to receive payments to such a colossal amount. That is what the PPA told me in that RTI request. And yet, monies have been paid, $58.1 million. And then these claims by the minister that there's been value for money audit, that there was some allocation in the budget, they are all baseless and unfounded claims. We know that she is now contradicting the former Minister of Finance. You recall that when the Honorable Ken Ofori-Atta appeared before the vote of Central Committee, Ken Ofori-Atta conceded that there was no allocation in the budget and that what he did was to take money from the contingency vote. You recall? So why are they shifting the goalposts? Why are they presenting us with different stories?
But did you put these facts to her, at least? You got the opportunity to ask these questions. What was the response?
We did. And she could not provide any satisfactory answer. Look, all these claims that they have a value for money audit report, if that report exists, what you do is that you bring it to the house, you lay it, so we can peruse the document. It wasn't brought.
Are you asking for these documents?
We are demanding them. Actually, what we are calling for is a probe. What happened in the house today is that they got the deputy majority leader, the Honorable Patricia Piaget, to file a question on cost, thinking that that will satisfy us. We are not satisfied. This National Cathedral project has opened a can of worms, from inflationary pricing, procurement breaches, constitutional violations, conflict of interest, double identity, demolition of properties, lack of compensation, court cases. It's a whole mess that one parliamentary question cannot resolve. What we need is a full-scale parliamentary inquiry to go into the entire gamut. And one single question cannot address that.
Okay.
So we are going back to our motion, and we are happy that motion is alive, approved by the speaker, debated by the house. They are stalling, refusing to present their members so we can form the committee and start work.
Okay.
But we are going to meet the speaker, and we will be insisting that this parliamentary inquiry should commence in earnest.
A quick question though, Ms. Okudjetuabulakwa. So learning now that we've spent 339 million Ghana cedis already at this foundation level, when you talk about the National Cathedral project, really driving by as a Ghanaian, it still raises a lot of concern for us. So knowing that we've spent this amount of money, if you were to suggest, what should we do? Should we just cover the hole? Should we just build it? What exactly do you recommend should be done?
I will suggest retrievals. We have portions of these monies with people who have no business keeping these monies. For example, Carrie Summers, based in the United States of America, who is keeping our $6 million. We can retrieve that immediately. David Ajay, who has over $28 million
he must be made to refund substantial portions of that.
And do that what? And do what with it is the concern, because of course we've started this. It's at the foundation level, the biggest hole. We've all described it. What exactly do you recommend should be done at this level?
So after the retrievals, I will recommend a national discussion. Fortunately, a number of suggestions have come up. The TUC, for example, have suggested that we should convert the place into a specialist pediatric hospital. Some we don't. Ghana doesn't have a properly so-called children's hospital. There are other suggestions coming about a medical school and all of that, because it's close to the Ridge Hospital, the Greater Accra Regional Hospital, the psychiatric hospital, and all of that. So these suggestions could be brought to the fore. Let's all agree. Let's go to Parliament, have a debate, let it be approved, and whatever we decide to do, let it be properly budgeted for. Let there be transparency. Let's follow our procurement laws. Let's follow all the legal regime that we must comply with when it comes to national projects.
Okay. We are grateful, Inez. That's the North Tongue MP, Samuel Okudzeto Ablakwa. Well, the minister has been giving other updates that we'll bring to you subsequently. George Wiafe is here. What a good time to bring George in when we're talking about finance issues. What's in business?
Well,
George?
Coming up, foreign direct investment for first quarter picks up strongly to hit $123 million. And Bank of Ghana says remittance data captures operations of fictives, rejecting claims of underreporting numbers covering that area. The business news on Newsnight is brought to you by MTN. Welcome to the new world of business.
Place your bets now.
You're welcome back to Business on Newsnight. Now, the total value of capital brought into the country by foreigners picked up strongly to hit $123 million for the first quarter of this year. Now, this was captured in the investment report released by the Ghana Investment Promotion Center for the first quarter of this year. There is more in this report.
The Ghana Investment Promotion Center recorded $106 million in foreign direct investments. When it comes to the first quarter of 2024, the country recorded $124 million in foreign direct investments. This actually represents 17% jump from what was recorded in the first quarter of 2023. The local component of this investment stood at more than $5 million, representing 80% increase over what was recorded in 2023. However, when it comes to projects in the first quarter of 2024, the GIPC only registered 32 projects compared to 36 in the same period for last year. Again, in the first quarter of 2024, Spain overtook China as the country with the highest value of foreign direct investments. The Ghana Investment Promotion Center data shows that things have picked up strongly when it comes to projects registered in total value of foreign direct investments. In terms of the first quarter performance, 32 projects were registered with the Ghana Investment Promotion Center from January to March this year. Out of the 32 projects, the manufacturing sector recorded the highest number with 12 projects. This was followed by services with 9, general trading with 4, export trade and building and construction with 2 projects each.
And that is a business desk report. Meanwhile, Chief Executive of the Ghana Investment Promotion Center, Yofi Grant, had earlier explained to Joy Business that despite the current economic challenge facing the country, it is still stand tall among its peers when it comes to attracting FDIs.
These things are not permanent. There are times when countries go through problems, and every country's gone through problems. Not even the biggest economy at the US, you know what's happening there. They're having serious economic issues as well. But of course, because the dollar is theirs, they can always print to cover their debt. Their debt is huge, humongous, quite over 100% of GDP. But, I mean, Ghana still stands unique. And some of our selling points are...
We still stand out in the midst of reports about companies relocating and...
Look, some of the indicators that investors look for are almost inherently placed in Ghana. For example, our political stability. We may take it for granted, but for the investor, that's a number one important factor that they need to understand, that this country is stable, so if I go there, I know 10 years, 20 years, things won't change dramatically. So I can be there. I can deal with the, you know, economic changes that come and go. I can deal with economic risk, because as business people, that's what they manage, economic risk.
Yofi Grant is the chief executive of the Ghana Investment Promotion Center. Make the fiscal council independent and active through a legislation. Now, that's one of the recommendations of the just-ended inaugural quarterly economic roundtable program, jointly organized by the Finance Ministry and the Institute of Statistical, Social and Economic Research. They also want enhanced transparency when it comes to borrowing by ensuring what they call responsible borrowing. These stakeholders also are recommending the build-up of existing sinking fund to ensure that there is enough resources to repay the restructured debt when payments are due. Now, the Bank of Ghana is insisting that remittance data over the years indeed captures operations of financial technology firms. It follows fresh concerns that the Bank of Ghana has indeed been underreporting the numbers, leaving the over $11 billion unaccounted for between 2019 to 2022. The Bank of Ghana has maintained that these fintechs do not hold dollars. Stephen Echampon is with the Fintech and Innovation Department at the Bank of Ghana. He's been speaking an explainer issued by the Bank of Ghana.
The payment service provider does not handle forex. They only pay these remittances into the beneficiary's mobile wallet or the bank account. Now, this arrangement requires a partner bank or a settlement bank. And it is this bank that receives the forex into their nostril account. And once the forex is received, the bank is supposed to convert that forex into Ghana cedis at the prevailing Bloomberg rate at the date on which the transfer is made. Once the payment service provider receives the cedis into their account, the local settlement account, then they can disburse it to the beneficiaries. So you see from this process flow that they do not handle forex, they do not trade the forex that is sent for the remittances to be terminated to the recipient. So the customer abroad goes to the outlet of the money transfer operator, and this money transfer operator is regulated in that particular jurisdiction. But the flow of the funds is such that the money transfer operator sends these funds to the partner bank's nostril account. And the payment service provider will then receive the CD equivalent and pay it to the Ghanaian customer. That's through their mobile money wallet or through their bank account.
Stephen Echampon is with the Fintech and Innovation Department of the Bank of Ghana, speaking in that explainer issued by the Central Bank. Now, Chief Enterprise Business Officer at MTN Angela Mensah-Poku is urging micro, small and medium-sized businesses to leverage on digital solutions to boost growth. She spoke to Joy Business at the launch of the MTN Ghana's SME Month, which focuses on building a better, smarter business for the country.
We're focusing on how to get businesses ready for the future. Not only digital services, but capacity building with our partners, and also how to access funding and also access to market. So when you look at the outcomes for this month is to make sure that we satisfy our customers that are currently with us and also see our customers move from good to great.
And Angela Mensah-Poku is Chief Enterprise Business Officer at MTN Ghana. Let's turn our attention to the stock market. And if you are a shareholder of Enterprise Insurance, you lost 23 pesos on your shares that you're holding. And it's now worth 2 Ghana cedis, 16 pesos. For that of Total Ghana, it was rather up strongly. I mean, posting or currently is worth 10 Ghana cedis, 80 pesos. And that's all for business on Newsnight.
Thank you very much, George. Have a good evening. Let's do some of your messages that you've sent in so far via WhatsApp. David Kinhart is from English Amanfu. Well, he says, please, it seems the government is insensitive to us Ghanaians, is the way he starts the message for me. Please. And upon all these hardships we are facing, inflation and co, the government still wants to continue with National Cathedral. He says, this is very sad. Sami Inkumasi says, did the Minister of State and the Ministry of Finance say the National Cathedral project merits the huge amount of the taxpayers' money spent on it? That's his question. And Paul Kwame Asante says, the Education Minister must be schooled on how educational policies are made and implemented. They are just pushing their ideas onto us. If they are only, okay, it's a very rather long message. And this one also, Gusty Man from Brekum says, I'm really surprised because these core individual who are speaking against the free SHS bill are hiding behind the opposition who are also against the policy to reject the bill. And final one from Courage Kotoka says, to be frank, I've been saying that the NPP always destroys our education sector. Just take a look at the basic schools, especially JHS. Some of your messages that you've sent so far.
And you are still live here on News Tonight. It's on Joy 99.7 FM. I'll take it to Parliament shortly, but first, you know that strike that has been called by the Civil and Local Government Staff Association, and when they cough, the entire government really will catch a cold, and we are beginning to see that now. A meeting was called today. The Civil and Local Government Staff clocks at. They failed to attend a meeting called by the National Labour Commission to address its concerns. Clocksaggers are protesting government's failure to implement a new salary structure agreed upon 2 years ago. According to its executives, several attempts to get various stakeholders to implement it proved futile, and that is what has triggered this nationwide strike. But this afternoon, they rejected calls by the NLC for a truce. We'll get the updates of what happened. But first, let's get a picture of how their strike is affecting government business. Sweetie Abochi was at the ministries and brought this report.
I count only two security personnel guarding the place, but nobody. Their gates and some vehicles have been branded with red cloth, signifying the industrial action, but nobody and no activity is ongoing. In fact, you can walk right into the reception area of this building and you won't meet a soul. There's nobody in the building. I counted just about two, three security personnel who said they came because they don't want to abandon the place. I also saw one gentleman who says he'll speak to us off record, and he explains that most of their bosses have even turned off their phones, and so you can't even reach them. Their bosses have been very clear that they shouldn't even come to the office. They are here for their own personal stuff. One person said he left a document here, so he only came to pick it up, and so they will not speak to us. We can take footages. We can see the red cloth that they've used to brand the place, and that is the message they have for whoever needs to hear from them. And until their bosses clear them, they will not say a word. And these bosses, they say, have also turned off their phones.
Well, Nana Bwachi Yadom also monitored the situation in the Ashanti region.
The impact of the strike initiated by CLOCSAG began manifesting itself immediately as emergencies were left unattended at some government departments in Kumasi. At some district assemblies, doors were locked with essential services on hold. Derek Frimpong is chairman of CLOCSAG in the Asoka municipality.
We are here to make sure that those ones that also want to find their way here, we stop them from coming to do any work here, because we want the government to hear us and hear us well. So until when you hear our National Council calling off this strike, then you can come back.
He admonished the government to arrive at a common ground soon enough to minimize the detrimental effect on service delivery.
Our employer, we are with you. 2022, you entered an agreement with us to take CLOCSAG into a new salary structure. And that is all that we are requesting for. Implementation was to start in 1st January 2023. And we are in 2004, July, as we stand. No show. So all that we are seeking is that hear us.
For Joy News, Nana Bwachi Dankwa Yadom, Kumasi.
Well, the NLC have been reacting to CLOCSAG's inability to attend today's meeting. Well, Ofusua Samwa, Executive Secretary for the NLC, says it's unfortunate.
It's an unfortunate one because, seriously, you have a problem. And you have reported to the commission that the commission intervenes. We wrote to the other party with whom you are contending. They have given their indication and said that, okay, we are ready to come and settle the case. So why would the one at whose instance this meeting is being called decide that I'm not coming to appear? You see, they sent a letter to the commission 3 days ago, which was suggestive that they might not attend. And that is, they have written to the commission through their lawyers, Gomda and Associates, challenging the composition of the commission, that the commission is not properly constituted. And their grounds are that they have caused a search, an official search, at the Registrar General's Department as to whether or not there are any bodies such as organized labor registered with the Registrar General's Department or Employers Association. And in both cases, the answer was no. And according to them, the representatives of the labor unions, organized labor here, since there is no registered body as organized labor, it means that their nomination is improper. So they don't know which body nominated them. Unfortunately, I can say on authority that they were part of the process that nominated them.
Well, he revealed the NLC will be directing CLOCSAC to call off the strike. Let's speak to Bright Rukubobe. He's currently the technical advisor to the employment minister. Was there himself, joins us right now on the line. Thank you, sir, for your time here on Newsnight. So, CLOCSAC, we're not at this meeting. What do you plan to do now?
Well, Evans, good evening, and good evening to your cherished listeners. Today, we were there as the law demands us to go to the Labour Commission. So we were there. Unfortunately, CLOCSAC did not turn up, and we pleaded that they give us a week to continue to engage them and ensure that we get this matter resolved. So basically, that's what happened at the NLC today.
Yes, but they weren't there, so the strike continues. What's your next move?
Our next move is inviting them. In fact, we are doing that tomorrow. And then, like I said, they served the notice yesterday. We got it quite late. And today, our ministers are in cabinet. We discussed it. So they have settled the concerns. We are hoping that they come out. And then we engage all the stakeholders, including CLOCSAC themselves, and ensure that we get this matter behind us. The public must be assured that this strike, I am very optimistic that if heads come together, we'll find a solution and it will not take too much time.
And that is a big if the heads will indeed come together. Today, they refuse to bring their heads to yours, anywhere close to yours. What's the confidence that they will do so when you invite them again?
Oh, well, that's the nature of the game. A group of persons are demanding something, you don't have it, you have it, it's inadequate, and you have to go back, you have to get mandate, they have to look at resources available, and so on. So I am very optimistic that where we've gotten to, we shouldn't even have gotten there. Unfortunately, time is not on anybody's side, and they have declared the strike. So we are working very, very, very fast, and then ensure that they go to work.
Okay, thank you very much. And that there is Bright Rukubobe, is the technical advisor to the employment minister. Let's do some sports now. Ms. Bao is here with the latest.
We're just 21 days to the start of the Olympic Games happening in Paris, and one of Ghana's swimmers, Josel Mensah, has been speaking following a qualification for the Games in Paris via the wildcard route. Now, she is one of two swimmers alongside Harry Stacey to feature at the Global Showpiece after being ranked as the highest female athlete in Ghana by World Aquatics. Now, her time of 26.52 seconds, which was attained at the 2023 African Games in the women's 50 meters freestyle event, was enough to secure her ticket. My colleague Aaron Mubarak has been speaking to her.
I was very excited. Of course, I had been hoping to be selected, but there's also a lot of competition amongst athletes, and you never truly know if you make it until you get that call or you get that message. So I was very happy, I was grateful, and obviously very excited.
Yes. Do you feel like your hard work over the years is gradually paying off after this big news?
Mm-hmm. Obviously the Olympics, it's the top end for every athlete. Everyone wishes to be at the Olympic Games at some point, since it's kind of the last stop on your athletic journey. But obviously my hard work, it has also paid off throughout my whole career. It's not just this one year or this one competition that I'm proud of myself, but many different steps. And obviously there's also ups and there's downs. And right now I'm very grateful to experience this.
She'll be participating in the 50 meters freestyle for Ghana in the Olympic Games. So tomorrow, Ghana will know the team that will be playing against for a slot in next year's African Cup of Nations in Morocco. So the draw will be held tomorrow. And Evans will bring you updates on that when it does happen.
Thank you very much, Ms. Bao. Now, barely 24 hours after the Trade and Industry Minister laid an ally to regulate cement prices, the Speaker of Parliament, Alban Bagbin, has strongly urged him to withdraw it. The proposed ally had been strongly opposed by manufacturers and some NDC members whose leadership surprisingly softened its stance, allowing it to be laid, drawing criticism from some backbenchers. Listen to the Speaker's reason.
I will advise, I'm not directed, I will advise that the sponsors of the instrument to take a second look at it and, if possible, withdraw and capture it in the appropriate language to come within the statutory limits that we have. It's just an advice. It's not a directive.
Well, the former minority leader, Haruna Idrisu, who said the ally was unlawful and should not have been laid, have also been insisting that he's going to consider taking legal action.
The constitutional issue that I'm not clothed with it, but I'm minded to test this matter in the Supreme Court. The Constitution in Article 11 provides that before a regulation, there must be dependence on a parent act. Which parent act, as referred to in the standards, is the Ghana Standards Authority Act 2022, Act 1078, Section 80. The Speaker, Section 80 uses the word sale and advertising. This is pricing. Do they have a mandate to regulate based on 80? That's constitutional. The Ghana Standards Authority, Mr. Speaker, I've had the privilege to be Minister for Trade and Industry, is an institution to regulate standards, phytosanitary standards, not pricing. Mr. Speaker, Ghana cannot vote this low. That in a democracy and a country, liberal, where market forces must determine prices, we have a minister acting to regulate pricing in the name of the republic. This is not to be contemplated by a government that believes in property owning democracy.
And the National Science and Maths Quiz continues to throw up some really good surprises.
As always.
You know the Dikamfo.
The Dikamfo?
Yes.
What is the Dikamfo? The leaders.
Yes.
They've become what?
Yes. Have you heard about PresbySHS Bampata? Bampata.
Today too.
Bampata.
Bampata.
Have you been there?
No.
Have you been to Bampata? Okay, yes. They've been doing wonders in the National Science of Maths Quiz. Knocking out Trinidad Kudia.
Yes. And they do JV.
Yes, they're established participants in the National Science of Maths Quiz. You know them. They will go there every year. They've not been there before.
Oh, okay.
Yes, and they won. Honorable Kwaku has more.